Today, the new reality emerges. The DFA Daily to the 3rd of April 2020. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. We're starting to get data flows now, which are beginning to highlight just how much damage is being done to our economy. The latest edition of the DFA Household Survey, is up to the 31st of March, reveals in painful detail the impact of the current health emergency. Not that confidence was particularly strong beforehand, thanks to the high cost of living and flat real incomes for several years, but the shock of the economic freeze and the rising joblessness has dropped the index to levels, well, frankly, I never expected to see. Last month, it had fallen to 80.2, but the latest read is 73.2, well below the average of 100, which we saw back in May 2017. And if you want more details, you can look at the show that we posted earlier on today. Elsewhere, the Grattan Institute said that consumer confidence is a timely measure of what Australian households think about their own finances and the state of the economy overall. In the weekend of the 29th of March, the ANZ Roy Morgan Consumer Confidence Index plunged to the lowest level in nearly 50 years. Even in the deep depressions of the early 1980s and 1990s, consumer confidence never reached the lows seen in late March. And ScoMo today said that the current trajectory of the health issue in Australia was encouraging, but he warned that it writes its own rules. And there was still nothing further concrete on the rental sector, although the PM said an industry code of practice for commercial and rental tenants was being worked on, but it still needed to be approved by the Cabinet, which will probably happen next Tuesday. Meantime, ASIC has warned landlords or their agents who encourage tenants to tap their super to pay the rent that this is illegal. There is evidence of heavy-handed actions by some landlords, and so the industry code is a critical minimum step. But as we've said before, one person's rental is another person's mortgage payment or living expenses, so this is a complex and interrelated issue. As the Australian put it, first, medium-sized managers are being told by tenant after tenant, many of whom are large overseas companies, that the tenants do not plan to pay rent for 6 months, taking advantage of the Prime Minister's edict that there can be no evictions. The managers must then go to their financiers, bank or non-bank, and explain what has happened. The lenders may accommodate them, but it has shattered confidence and makes it likely that values will not return to the old levels after the crisis is over. Lenders, either in the short or longer term, will require more ASIC cover, and that usually means sales. On the other side of the dog-eat-dog game, some of the larger centres feel that they have strength and are treating their smaller tenants harshly, making it very hard to gain rent relief. And I'm hearing some terrible stories. The ACCC says shopping centre owners and managers have been granted interim authorisation to discuss and implement rent relief measures for small to medium shopping centre tenants facing hardship because of the current crisis. This follows an application by Shopping Centre Council of Australia Limited, the SCCA, and Centre Group. The SCCA is an industry group representing Australia's major shopping centre owners, managers and developers. Centre Group owns and operates retail estate under management, including 42 Westfield shopping centres. And the ACCC has allowed shopping centre owners and managers to jointly develop a plan to help their small business tenants, including franchisees and licensees, which have a turnover of up to $50 million per annum. The plan would include an offer to defer or reduce rents and other payments, waive interest payments, and extend leases. Support for small and medium businesses in this difficult time will help the economy start up again when things have subsided, the ACCC chair, Rod Sims, said. We're allowing shopping centre owners to work together to come up with a plan to support their tenants experiencing financial difficulties. Nothing in the proposal stops individual owners from offering more generous concessions to their tenants. And the ACCC will be notified of the rent relief measures agreed to, which will be published on its authorisations register. the ACCC can object to any proposed agreement and revoke the authorization at any time. Having granted interim authorization for the arrangements, the ACCC will now seek feedback on the application for final authorization, which is sought for a period of 12 months. And a formal letter from ASIC, the financial watchdog, was sent to Australian real estate industry bodies outlining the issue of real estate agents providing unsolicited financial information to their tenants. Financial advice must only be provided by qualified and licensed financial advisors or financial counsellors, not by real estate agents who neither hold the requisite licence nor are an authorised representative of an Australian financial services licensee, wrote Tim Mullinay, Executive Director, Financial Services Enforcement at the Australian Securities and Investment Commission. Tenants facing financial difficulty need sound financial guidance and potentially debt counselling, specifically pointing them to and recommending them to consider the specific possibility of accessing superannuation is, again, likely to amount to a breach of the Act. And the Labour Party jumped on board to join ASIC in their condemnation of those real estate agents providing unsolicited financial advice, saying some real estate agents are bullying tenants by demanding they pay rent in advance and demanding they draw down on their retirement savings to pay rent, said opposition leader Anthony Albanese. While most agents are behaving professionally, Labour has received reports of unacceptable behaviour and calls on the industry to show more care for tenants in the face of the crisis. But REIA President Adrian Kelly reacted to the Labour leader's comments, saying he agreed that real estate agents providing financial advice is illegal, but did not appreciate the broad brush Mr. Albanese painted the industry with. To condemn all agents because of the actions of a minority is akin to saying all union members are militant lawbreakers because of the actions of a few, said Mr. Kelly. Over the past 3 weeks, I and many others in our industry have been very public about looking after the needs of both our tenants and property owners, in particular those who are experiencing financial hardship. Our members are receiving the telephone calls every 5 minutes from our tenants and property owners who have lost employment, and we have been waiting nearly 2 weeks now for the state and federal governments to agree on a framework so that we can get on with our job. For the Labour Party to come out today slinging mud at our industry when they know full well that the vast majority of us are doing the best we can under very trying circumstances is irresponsible. Back briefly to the PM, who said that places of worship will be considered workplaces to allow religious groups to live stream religious services over Easter. And he also said that people living in Australia on visitor visas should, quote, make their way home. And finally, Australia's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Brendan Murphy, said he believes the global case count could be 5 to 10 times higher than the 1 million known cases. And that, of course, is pretty disturbing. Meantime, the wells of economic stimulation continue to burp up more money. Beyond the current 16% of GDP, which the federal government has coughed up, the states are busy doing stuff too. Just today, for example, New South Wales announced $10,000 grants to certain businesses in selected sectors, and the Grattan Institute has done the sums on what the states are throwing into the mix. It amounts to around an additional $15 billion of stimulus measures, ranging between 0.3% in the ACT to 2.8% of Tasmania of gross state product, or GSP. They say about 28% of the spending by the states and territories is on hospitals and healthcare, including intensive care unit capacity, testing, ventilators, medical equipment, and respiratory clinics. 46% of the money will go on supporting businesses, most of it via payroll tax relief, and all six states will waive the levy for selected sectors. Another 14% is destined for households. This includes rebates and freezes on household fees and charges, as well as money for retraining and redeploying workers who would otherwise have lost their jobs. Other initiatives include direct support for employment, bringing forward capital and maintenance expenditure, and support for community groups and charities. and the ABS released their retail turnover data for February, which was up 0.5% seasonally adjusted. A preliminary estimate of 0.4% had been published on the 18th of March. So it's a stronger result than expected, but it's meaningless, frankly. As the ABS said, retailers reported increases in food retailing slightly offset by falls in more discretionary spending. There were rises in food retailing up 0.8%, department stores up 3.1%, household goods retailing up 0.7%, cafes, restaurants and takeaway foods up 0.2%, and other retailing up 0.2%. These rises were partially offset by a fall in clothing, footwear and personal accessory retailing down 2.9%. The increase in food retailing is supported by additional analysis conducted by the ABS to enhance the understanding of the economic impacts of the current crisis, and it shows significant rises in supermarket purchases in February 2020, especially around, guess what, essential groceries. In seasonally adjusted terms, there were rises in Queensland 0.8%, Victoria 0.5%, Western Australia 1.2%, South Australia 0.4%, and the Australian Capital Territory 1.1%. Tasmania was flat, as was New South Wales. The Northern Territory was down 0.7%, seasonally adjusted. Online retail turnover contributed 6.6% to the original retail turnover, and in 2019, it was 5.6%, so online sales have registered a robust 5% gain in the last month, a shift that is likely to become more pronounced in coming months, although some retailers have restricted online delivery options due to excessive buying as consumers seek to stockpile. Perhaps this is the last gasp for many categories of retail for some time. And it's worth noting that at 1.8% over the year annual growth, it's still sluggish. That's the slowest pace of growth since late 2017. One aspect worth noting is the restriction in people movements across the country. Roy Morgan has partnered with leading technological innovator Uber Media to aggregate data from tens of thousands of mobile devices to assess the impact of new government regulations on social distancing throughout Australia. The first Australian death had been reported back on March the 1st, and from that point, the trend for movement data in the Melbourne CBD has changed and rapidly declined since mid-March. The spikes in movement have been earlier in the week and dropped off over the course of the week as retail stores have closed and office workers begin working from home. These declines in movements have been observed not only in Melbourne's CBD, but also in key meeting points such as the Arts Centre and South Bank, Federation Square, Flinders Street Station, the Botanic Gardens, and also at large suburban shopping centres such as Chadstone, Highpoint and Southland. And the aggregated data shows a peak in movements in Sydney CBD in mid-February, followed by a gentle decline over the following 4 weeks, and much steeper declines since mid-March, as social distancing and self-isolation directives have been issued by governments. These declines in movements have been observed not only in Sydney CBD, but also in key meeting points such as Central and Redfern stations, Sydney Airport, Sydney's Taronga Zoo, and also at large shopping centres such as Chatswood and Westfield Bondi and Warunga. Now on property news, things continue to deteriorate. CoreLogic released its latest pain and gain report, which reveals that nearly one in five apartments were sold at a loss across Australia's capital cities over the December quarter, so before the crisis. Just under one in 10 detached houses also sold at a loss across the combined capitals. In fact, the proportion of loss-making properties has fallen across all markets from the highs of 2018, and this might just be the peak as prices will tumble from here. And the number of new rental listings has surged in recent weeks, according to Domain, figures that they supplied to Business Insider Australia, as options for renters swell. Listings on the rental market jump pretty much in all states, and one of the reasons behind this is that we think Airbnb and other short-term listings are now coming back onto long-term rental markets, Domain economist Trent Wiltshire told Business Insider. On top of that, we're seeing people are also moving back home, and share houses are breaking up because people are worried about their jobs or struggling to pay their rent. People have also likely gone back home overseas as well, and that's another probable factor. In combination, we're certainly seeing more rentals hitting the market. And while realestate.com.au declined to share its figures, the overall picture from Domain is pretty staggering. Nearly 40,000 new homes have been listed nationally in the last 2 weeks, almost 8,000 or 20% more than this time last year. In Tasmania, Australia's smallest state and one of its most tourism-reliant, there has been an astonishing 58% surge. Meanwhile, the country's three big eastern states, Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland, have collectively seen more than 30,000 new rentals emerge, a 25, 21 and 18% jump on last year's respectively. Now, I'm doing some work for Channel 9 on forced sales using the DFA core market model. It already looks like the number of properties for sale will rise, and there'll be more on this next week. And the superannuation industry continues to whine about their predicament as unlisted assets are being revalued down and members seek to withdraw funds and portfolio values fall. The good times for them in terms of fees and growth are long gone, and it should shake out the poor performers, though I'm not sure how many will be left intact if that happens. Australian Super's chief executive Ian Silk puts the case for possible Reserve Bank of Australia liquidity support for industry super funds. He points to the fact that the financial system is in uncharted territory. He says if the Treasury's estimate of a $27 billion drawdown of super savings by millions of Australians proves accurate, the industry will probably sell through with no liquidity issues. But if the Treasury is wrong and the figure is more like $40 billion to $50 billion as estimated by actuaries Price Warner Silk, there will almost certainly be industry funds in need of emergency liquidity. I think any discussion about it, including Murray's comment about moral hazard, has to be seen in the context that, as far as I see it, this has never happened before, that people have been able to take significant amounts of money out with virtually no notice, Silk says in an interview with Cantillier. More crocodile tears, I think, but expect some sort of government bailout. After all, everyone else is on the gravy train, from airlines to childcare. So why not the whole super system as well? And over in the US, the latest Unemployment Weekly jobless claims statistics were horrible, with the labour market reporting in the week ending March 28th, the adjusted figure for season-adjusted initial claims was 6.6 million. An increase of 3,300 from the previous week revised level. This marks the highest level of seasonally adjusted initial claims in the history of the series. The previous week's level was revised up by 24,000 from 3.2 to 3.3 million, and the four-week moving average was 2.6 million. The previous week's average was revised up as well, by the way, and that puts about 10 million workers in the US on the dole. And Bloomberg reported that US mortgage lenders are preparing for the biggest wave of delinquencies in history. If the plan to buy time works, they may avert a crisis, mass foreclosures, and mortgage market mayhem, they said. Borrowers who lost income from the current crisis, already a skyrocketing number with a record 10 million new jobless claims, can ask to skip payments for as many as 180 days at a time on federally backed mortgages and avoid penalties and hits to their credit scores. But it's not a payment holiday. Eventually, they will have to make it all up. As many as 30% of Americans have home loans. About 15 million households could stop paying if the US economy remains closed through the summer or beyond, according to chief economist for Moody's. This is an unprecedented event, said Susan Wancher, professor of real estate and finance at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. The great financial crisis happened over a number of years. This is happening in a matter of months, a matter of weeks. I expect policymakers to do whatever they can to hold the line on the financial crisis, and that means preventing foreclosures by any means necessary. And finally, the Federal Reserve expanded their balance sheet by $557 billion in the past week to a total of $5.81 trillion. This excludes an additional $200 billion of mortgage-backed security purchases, which are yet to settle. When they do, the balance sheet will be above $6 trillion, and that's an increase of $1.5 trillion in just 3 weeks. Incredible amounts of money are being summoned from nowhere, and inflating global debt to unprecedented levels, and risks, of course, abound. And so to the markets. The ASX 200 closed 1.68% down at 5,067. The Financial Services Index dropped 2.13% to 4,099. And the Real Estate Trust dropped 3.21% to 1,005. The Volatility Index was at 43.11. And the ASX 200 futures was down 3.02% to 5,097. ANZ was down 3.27% to 1570. CBA was down 2.98% to 5978. NAB was down 3.36% to 1553. And Westpac was down 3.49% to 1548, with reports that they were considering whether they needed to trim their dividend policy ahead to retain capital. Bank of Queensland was down 2% to 489. Bendigo and Adelaide Bank was down 2.99% to 617. Suncorp was down 1% to 874. And Macquarie was down 5.14% to 8372. AMP was down 9.01% to $1.21. And the mortgage lender's insurer, Genworth, was at 2.01. McGrath, the real estate guys, was down 5.26% to 18 cents. And Yellow Brick Row was down 5.56% to 5.1 cents. AFG was up 0.39% to 129. And Mortgage Choice was down 2.36% to 62 cents. CMAC was down 0.65% to 23.10. The Aussie US dollar was down 0.4% to 60.35. And the Euro Aussie dollar was down 0.04% to 1.7891. The 2-year bond was down 2.63% to 0.222. And the 10-year bond was up 0.84% to 0.779. The gold Aussie cross was up 2.67% to 2,675. And the Bitcoin Aussie cross was up 5.64% to 11,488. And briefly to close, the Dow Jones last night rose 2.24% to 21,413. The S&P 500 was up 2.28% to 2,526. The financials index was up 2.47% to 333.40. And the volatility index was up just a little to 50.86. Gold was down 0.28% to 1,633. And WTI oil was up 1.22% to 25.63 after reports emanating from Trump, I think, that perhaps Saudi and Russia was agreeing something with regard to the supply of oil. And Bitcoin was up 4.42% to 6,918. And looking forward tonight, the S&P 500 futures is down 0.79% to 2,496. And the NASDAQ futures is also pointing down 0.81% to 7,566. So standing back, we can continue to see the fallout from all of the things that are going on around the world, with all of that flow of funds into the financial system, with all of the concerns about the momentum in the economies around the world, and all the efforts to try and hold things together. Of course, we really don't know how this is all going to play out, but there seems to be a consensus emerging that we should be preparing for at least 6 months of this. 6 months, which will take us towards the latter part of the year. I'm not sure that many have yet got their heads around that, and frankly, I'm not sure the markets have for one, which is why I continue to believe that markets will remain very volatile and that we have not yet reached the bottom. But we'll continue to track this as we go forward, and you're welcome to join me next time when I review the latest information coming out from all the sources that we tap into. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.